Welcome to the Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. I am Jeff Hall, Senior Editor for Diagnostic Imaging. In our latest podcast episode, the first of a two-part podcast on emerging trends of theranostics for prostate cancer, we'll be discussing recent advances in PSMA-targeted radiotracers for metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer, as well as the role of key imaging criteria for monitoring treatment with PSMA-targeted radionuclide therapy. Am pleased to be joined on this podcast episode by Doctors Jeremy Calais and Robert Flavell. Dr. Calais is an associate professor in the Department of Molecular and Medical Pharmacology at the University of California, Los Angeles. He is also the director of the Theranostics Program with the Amundsen Translational Theranostics Division at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Dr. Flavell is the chief of molecular imaging and the therapeutics clinical section in the Department of Radiology and Biomedical Imaging at the University of California, San Francisco. Now, let's get to the questions for Dr. Calais and Dr. Flavell. What kind of impact have recent advances in PSMA-targeted radiotracers had in the treatment of metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer?
So thanks. That's a great question. I think there's been a huge amount of changes recently, thanks to PSMA-targeted radiotracers. I think in recent times, particularly in the metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer setting, there's been a lot of focus on therapeutic radiopharmaceuticals, particularly, lutetium PSMA. We now have standard of care agents, lutetium PSMA 617, which was initially approved for treatment of mCRPC in the post-chemotherapy setting, and then more recently, as of March of this year, now approved in the pre-chemotherapy setting. There's a number of ongoing clinical trials looking at this therapeutic and other different stages of disease, particularly earlier on in the stage of disease, so in hormone-sensitive disease, oligometastatic disease, et cetera. So really just exciting times for the use of this therapeutic agent.
I can add on to that for the diagnostic portion, maybe the PSMA radionuclide imaging agents. Since the initial approval in 2020, we have seen a number of them subsequently getting approved as well. I can name DCFPYL, so PYLARIFY, then RH-PSMA 7.3, post-Luma for the F18 agents. Then there is different ways to get to gallium-68 PSMA 11. You have the FDA-approved UCLA-UCSF methods approved in 2020. You have the kit-based method from Telix, for example, Illuccix. There is another just recently approved one from Telix as well. And there is also LOCAMETZ from Novartis. They all go to the same final product, the gallium-68 PSMA 11. But overall, it just says that there are now a number of ways to get to PSMA-targeted imaging PET for our prostate cancer patients. And I think that's, really great, great opportunity for them to get, cutting-edge imaging techniques for their prostate cancer management. Now, I think although in the early disease stage setting, initial staging, you're looking at, if a patient has metastases or not. Biochemical recurrence, you try to locate where the source of the PSA is coming from. In the metastatic castration-resistant setting, patients have already been diagnosed with metastatic disease. They had, known disease for quite some time. So the role on how to use PSMA imaging here is still a little bit undefined in certain clinical case scenario. And I think that's currently the most interesting part is how to use at best PSMA imaging for metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer patient.
And what are the key imaging criteria and biomarkers used to select and monitor patients for PSMA-targeted radionuclide therapy?
Right, that's a good transition from the points just raised before. Let's start with conventional tests and methods that we're using for mCRPC treatments with Pluvicto and PSMA-targeted therapy. We're going to use PSA mostly to monitor, of course. We're also going to use a little bit other lab tests, for the toxicity side to monitor the bone marrow function, the kidney function. We can use some clinical test scores assessing under the bone pain, the quality of life. We also, for example, at UCLA, we do use it in routine practice, although they are mostly used in clinical trials. And then we're going to talk about it later, but we have now a lot of new tests available for DNA sequencing, liquid biopsies that we can use as well. But first, let's talk about imaging. Coming from, RECIST and PCWG3 criteria with CT and bone scan and the way we read out trials, initially, I think people were still using this a little bit in PSMA radioligand therapy, although I think when the Pluvicto agent, the Pluvicto treatments and other PSMA radioligand therapy agents came to the market, it is so linked to the PSMA targeted imaging at screening because you want to ensure correct target expression for most of the lesions. So you do PSMA PET initially, and that's required. And that was already a major step into not using CT and bone scan for further monitoring later on. So I think initially people were already, out of the box using PSMA PET imaging because it was the test done at screening. And although, habits take some time to change, I think both radiologists, nuclear medicine physicians, but most importantly, urologists and medical oncologists, they're more and more using PSMA PET imaging, because it's covered and reimbursed for restaging. And so they do it, at different time points, depending on patient preferences, doctor preferences, center's preferences, to monter patients under lutetium PSMA therapy. I think there is great potential here. We'll talk maybe later about FDG PET and maybe other tracers, but you can visualize basically very rapidly on the MIP, or even if you want to quantify it with algorithms that can quantify the tumor volumes, you can see over time how the tumor volume changes under the treatments, and that's a major information. You can monitor for the appearance of new lesions expressing PSMA or not with the CT information. And combining that with PSA and ctDNA can really give you refined tumor response assessment after, two cycles. I think everybody should get at least two cycles, and then you see if you continue or not, and maybe you can expect to change your management based on that. There are still different criteria on how to really read PSMA PET for tumor response assessment. We can name RECIP, which is a combination of apparition of new lesions and volume changes, either assessed with algorithms or visually. But there are other classification system. We can name PSMA-RAD, PROMIS, ePSMA. There are several of them. And I think PCWG4, PCWG5. I think in the future, at some point, we'll have a new approved and consensual system to really do interim response assessment with PSMA PET. But for now, it's still ongoing.
I think that's a great, great discussion, Jeremy. I definitely agree with everything you said. One other thing I might touch on is the use of post-therapy SPECT imaging in the context of PSMA therapy. I don't think it's used that much out there in the community. We do use it
More and
for all.
more, more and more.
We do use it for all of our patients and some other people. Mostly, I would say academic more places more do a lot of post-therapy SPECT imaging. But one thing to remember with the lutetium PSMA therapy is that you can use the radiation from the therapy to generate an image. It does, in fact, emit a lower fraction of gammas. So you get, if you perform SPECT imaging with every cycle, you essentially get a free PET scan every cycle without administering additional radiopharmaceutical. And yeah, we've definitely found this is pretty useful for following response to therapy. It's you can certainly have a clear depiction if patients are responding. It's particularly useful in patients that are kind of, are quote unquote low PSA secretors. They don't have a lot of PSA. We can see kind of heterogeneous responses with patients having, early progression, despite having stable PSA level. So it's a very valuable technique that I think is underutilized in the community, although I expect it's going to be used more as time goes on.
Right, I confirm. We do that now at UCLA routinely, unless the patient, really doesn't want to stay longer or come back. We try really to encourage that even in our clinical patients. It is not down also in our clinical trials, and it is really useful. Right, the volume information, you can get it also on SPECT, similar to PET. So, completely agree, and you get it at each cycle. So I hope also that the community will be more aware and about that technique to spread it out.
I'd like to thank Dr. Jeremy Kleas and Dr. Robert Flavell for sharing their insights on this topic. I would also like to thank the listeners for joining us in the Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. As always, visit diagnosticimaging.com for the latest news and perspectives in radiology.